This program is a rebroadcast of a previously aired show. Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne and I'll be with you for the next 30 minutes. On today's show, we'll take our time. Time to listen and to remember those who fought for us. As we pause for Remembrance Day, we will travel to British Columbia and meet Canadian War veteran Lawrence Allen Kerr. He's 97 and was a gunner in the Canadian Navy.
You were always on edge. You didn't know when anything could happen, you know. You could get torpedoed yourself. Our own ship, you see, too. Because there was quite a few of them that did get torpedoed. You don't know. The difference at night when you could see other, you know, some of the ships burning, you see, made you wonder. You didn't feel safe all the time.
And then to Kingston, Ontario, where community radio station CFRC is running its shortwave theater festival that presents radio plays. We'll dive into Haley Sarfield's play, Half Past Lunchtime, inspired by a concussion she suffered.
There's a line in the song Strawberry Brain, which was the first song I wrote after I had had a concussion. Like, the whole idea is like, preserve all my thoughts for later use. I'm under sweet sedation. And it was this kind of thing where when I was initially experiencing concussion symptoms, part of me was thinking, man, like, this is such like good creative fodder, but I am so mentally and emotionally and physically broken, and just kind of writing down these little lines about, like, I have a strawberry brain, my brain's like a bruised strawberry, that sort of turns into.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
We open the show in British Columbia as we honor all the men and women who served to protect us during the First and Second World Wars and thereafter. We meet up with a lone survivor, a World War II veteran that is one of the last of its kind in northern BC. A man who spent his military life serving in the Navy. His name is Lawrence Allen Kerr. He's 97 and lives in Hazelton, British Columbia. Over a million Canadians fought in the Second World War. Kerr was one of them and, today, one of the 40,000 survivors left from that period. Kerr was only 16 when he joined the Canadian Forces. He left Climax, Saskatchewan to train in the Canadian Army in Regina. That's also where he met his wife, Pearl. From there, he went by train to Cornwallis, Nova Scotia to join the Navy. He spent 4 years overseas, mainly in the North Atlantic, then began his life with his wife in British Columbia. In 2020, he was the last surviving World War II veteran marching in the Smithers Remembrance Day ceremony and was the only World War II vet marching this year in Hazelton. Pamela Hassan caught up with Lawrence, who shared his memories from wartime.
I was born in Saskatchewan and a small town in Saskatchewan, Climax, Saskatchewan, November 30th, 1925.
So, Lawrence, what were you doing before the war?
Well, I wasn't doing much because I joined when I was 16, you see.
Were you enlisted or were you drafted into the war?
Oh, no, I enlisted.
You did. Can I ask why? What was the reason for you to enlist, especially at such a young age?
Well, that's pretty hard to answer. I just decided there were some of my friends, older friends, that went. So I decided I would too.
And where did you enter service?
I went to Regina, Saskatchewan for training. We went on the gun range and stuff like that, learned to shoot and stuff like that. Lots of marching and lots of training with guns and stuff like that. And then after training in Regina, I went to Cornwallis, Nova Scotia. I was in the Navy, you see. And from there, of course, we took a lot of extra training there. I was trained on a ship there, depth charges and stuff like that against the submarines.
You know, you're pretty young. You're 16, you know, 16, 17 when you're being trained all this. Were you scared? Were you nervous? What were you feeling?
At times, yes. I'd never been away from home before. And I never seen water before, because where I lived in Saskatchewan, there was no water.
That's right.
I remember going, when I left Regina to go east, I think we got down around, it was the night on the train. I was surprised looking out to the water. I think we went around the north end of the Great Lakes, but that's the first I saw any water of any size.
When did you deploy overseas?
Overseas in 44 on the North Atlantic, guarding the merchant ships, and there was lots of submarines there, German submarines.
And what was your role?
I was a gunner. We dropped depth charges every once in a while, but I don't know if we ever got anything or not.
Were you missing home? What were you feeling and what were you thinking, especially when you were experiencing battle and fire? What were you missing?
You were always on edge. You didn't know when anything could happen, you know. You could get torpedoed yourself. Our own ship, you see, too. Because there was quite a few of them that did get torpedoed. So you don't know. The difference at night when you could see some of the ships burning, you see, made you wonder. You didn't feel safe all the time.
Do you think that experience of being on edge, do you think that that's something that you took with you after the war? Or do you feel like that was a chapter that was closed in your life?
Well, I think it was kind of closed. Once they finished war in Europe, it was V-Day. They brought the ships, not all of them, but they brought mine into Halifax. I volunteered to go to Japan. I got a 55-day leave. Before that was up, they happened to drop the bomb on Japan, and that stopped that. And then, it was a few months before we got discharged, you see. Quite a few months, in fact. I was discharged in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and got a ticket on the train back to where I lived.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever wounded?
No. I was in the hospital one time for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. I had pneumonia, but I recovered. That was pretty rough on the North Atlantic in the wintertime, you know. It's a very bad ocean. Very rough.
How old were you when you returned to Canada then?
I was 20.
Did you feel grown up by that point?
Oh, definitely.
Lawrence, what do you think are some of your most memorable experiences from the war and from the wartime?
Oh, when we come to port, we used to go to the Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. They had a big hostels for us and stuff like that, you know. I remember one time we docked at St. John, New Brunswick. We spent New Year's there on shore.
That must have been special.
Yes, it was. Yeah. A few of the buddies, you know. We always had different friends that we chummed with, worked with, you see.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your service in World War II affected the rest of your life?
Well, it did my hearing, because my ears were damaged from the guns, and we didn't have no ear protectors in those days, you know.
Right.
It took me a while to get a pension from them. We didn't get it right away, but I finally got it, and I still get a small pension for my ears.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing aids, everything, batteries, and everything supplied, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I get assistance for my house cleaning and stuff like that. But see, I was discharged in '46. I must have come to BC about 2 years after. And then I joined the Legion in BC.
Why did you move here? Did you have family or friends for a job?
Yeah, I worked for a short time on the railway. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the reason I moved out of Saskatchewan. I didn't like the wind anymore. It didn't quit blowing, right? There were no trees where I lived.
Yeah.
In the southwest corner of Saskatchewan. The only trees that were there were people planted around their homes.
Did you ever marry?
I was married when I was in the Navy. My wife was in the Army. And when I went to in training in Regina, she was stationed there, and that's where we met.
Well, what's her name?
Pearl.
Pearl.
And she was born in Ontario. And she also joined when she was 16.
When at the sight of you, my heart begins to pound and pound. And what am I to do? Can I be with you? Sunday, Monday, or always
and forever I must be with you.
Tell me about meeting Pearl. Can you tell me about meeting her and then also just the experience of getting married during wartime?
We went to dances and stuff when we were training there in Regina, and that's where I met her, I guess. We were married in Digby, Nova Scotia. She come down there and we were married.
Mm-hmm. You moved back to Saskatchewan together. Did you start a family? Did you move to BC together? What did you do next?
No, she was discharged well before me.
Mm-hmm.
We had a daughter, and she went home in Ontario, and we had a daughter there. And then we moved to Saskatchewan after that. My youngest son and his wife, they were in the peacetime army. They spent 33 years in. He was all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So you're still pretty mobile then?
Oh, yes. I got a car and a truck. I've got a camper. I do a lot of camping and hunting and fishing.
Lawrence, I had no idea.
I even got a treadmill in my living room here.
So there's just no stopping you, is there?
My oldest sister, she just turned 103.
Oh my gosh.
She lives in Penticton, BC. I had a good chat with her on her birthday.
Okay, so what's the secret? Why do you all live so long?
I don't know.
Oh, you're just not willing to share it.
Couldn't tell you.
Wow.
She's doing real good too. I just had to renew my driver's license about a week ago. They gave me another license for 5 years.
While speaking about World War II is obviously a serious subject and Remembrance Day deserves reverence, Lawrence was a bit of a joker and he was quite fun to talk to. So I'm just going to add this last little clip of the conversation between Lawrence and I. Thanks for listening.
I don't know. Oh, I'm still here.
Well, you won't tell me. You know you're doing something right, but you just won't tell us.
I think it's that good rye whiskey I drink.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you'll never get pneumonia if you drink good rye whiskey.
I still have a little once in a while.
That's great. That's very good.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Thanks so much. This has been so fun to talk to you.
Yeah, okay, then.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
This program is a rebroadcast.
Turn.
You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
One thing we had a lot of use for during the Second World War is shortwave radio. International radio stations would sometimes feed the enemy with disinformation or pass coded messages through to the troops and resistance. The BBC and now dismantled Radio Canada International played an important role in World War II. And something still lingers from that era, and it's happening in Kingston, Ontario, where a community radio station, CFRC-FM, one of the oldest stations in the country, has been putting together the Shortwave Theatre Festival, a series of original shows from Kingston-affiliated playwrights, directors, sound designers, and actors. One of the shows was Half Past Lunchtime by Haley Sarfeld. Half Past Lunchtime is told from the point of view of a feline flaneur who meets a forager, a full-time worker, a concussed daydreamer, a robin, a widow, and cucumber bees. Sarfeld credits her neighborhood located in Friendship Park and Bell Park as sources of inspiration for the strong nature component of the production. Sarfeld composed the music, sang, played the guitar, piano, melodica, and even a yogurt container tambourine. The first song she composed came from her experience of suffering a concussion, which was for her a source of humility, but evidently also a new way to capture her creativity and to rekindle her sense of belonging. Karim Masna caught up with playwright and composer Haley Sarfeld in Kingston's Friendship Park to talk about Half Past Lunchtime and Haley's creative process.
It can get kind of tricky talking about writing when you're basing things from some real life experience, and I don't like the way that writers sometimes get pigeonholed as like, oh, you wrote this character based on this person, or this is based on yourself, and I'm like, it's all me, none of it is me, everything. So I guess definitely there are certain conversations and certain interactions that are reminiscent of things that I've had happen in my life or with my friends or in this kind of neighborhood, but then also drawing from like stuff my mom says, or like just kind of all over the place. The way that I think about the play is like it's kind of like this neighborhood where there's all these kind of like weird angled intersections, and you've got these people going in and out of each other's lives, and all of the characters are dealing with a lot of isolation and a lot of grief from like a brain injury and the disability that creates, and from, you know, widowhood, or even just like going through the grief of gardening and there's bugs all over your plants. I just wanted to sort of see the way like when people bump up against each other in those moments of grieving and kind of have some relief from it.
I'd like to lose my head, let you split me down the middle and strip away my bitter green. I know that it's been said, I'm a nuisance, I'm no use, I'm just a weed, and I spread too easily.
We're in the neighborhood that really gave you, perhaps you could say, the base for your story. I mean, we're just up the road from Friendship Park. Tell me about that connection.
Well, now I live a little north of here, but I've lived in this neighborhood and around it for a few years, and I guess there's a lot of gardening, a lot of food sharing, like the mutual aid Cataraqui Kingston, really, really free veggie markets happen in this neighborhood and other neighborhoods around. And there's just kind of like a big sense of connection in that community. And also we're kind of near Bell Park, where there have been events by the Bell Park Project. This year there was a BioBlitz where people take the app iNaturalist and collect data to kind of show how much life there is in these places that are kind of under threat by developers.
What time is it, Mr. Wolf? One, two.
Plumberry, cherry, chestnut, and pine. How you gonna get to Princess on time?
Well, the next thing I'd like to get into is the music. You know, the storyline just merges so seamlessly into a song. And I understand you wrote and sang throughout the production.
Yeah, I also played the guitar, piano, and melodica, and some little egg shakers, as well as, I think, a yogurt container tambourine thing that my housemate made in teacher's college.
Oh, pure creativity right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was a really fun kind of project because this was my first time really having to perform everything by myself. And typically I've been like, well, I'm a vocalist, but I'm not that good at instruments. So then I've had, like, in bands I've been in the past or with my partner, I've really, like, let other people's instrumental music. I found that being forced to deal with, you know, I actually can kind of play some instruments. And, or, for example, the Fruit Belt Blues arrangement is completely vocal, and I was like, well, I can sing, four of me could sing at once, that's something. Yeah, it was kind of like a neat opportunity to completely DIY, or I guess DIM, do it myself. Thank you so much for the cherries.
You're very welcome, my dear. They came in early this year. My husband used to soak them in rum and make cocktails.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Come by and pick more anytime, all right?
Thanks, have a good afternoon.
Tell me about how this got to the Shortwave Festival and on the CFRC airwaves.
So in 2019, my friend Risha Andrade had reached out to me because she wrote a play for the first Shortwave Festival called A Strong Girl. And it's this, like, beautiful, like, also set in Kingston, like, lesbian ghost Victorian drama. And she was saying, like, I have this script, it's going to be produced, I really would like there to be a song in it. And she had heard me sing and write some songs in one of my earlier projects, Saf Decaf, which is all about, like, kind of like queer love and sentimentality. And so she she asked me to write a song for that, and so I worked with the script and wrote a little song called Red and Winsome, and that ended up sneaking its way into A Strong Girl at the very end. And then when I saw the call for play applications come around for the, I guess in 2021, last year, I thought, hey, if Risha can write a play, I can write a play. Hey, if I can sing on the radio, I could do something. And then at that point, I had been writing a lot of music just from experiences like picking 100 dandelion heads to make syrup, or being very frustrated in a kind of very theatrical way with some cucumber beetles. And I thought, like, oh, this doesn't really feel like, I don't know, indie singer-songwriter EP material, but it feels very musical theatery, which is, I guess, the way that I tend. So then I thought, okay, how could I kind of concept album-y, musically put this together? And then I was scrolling on Facebook, and I was thinking about the neighborhood and cats and everything, and that all kind of transpired into sewing those scenes together.
I found him. There you are. Just 2 minutes before dinner. Told you he'd be home in time. Come on, Leo. Let's get you fed.
Plumberry, cherry, chestnut, and pine. Plumberry, cherry, chestnut, and pine.
The cast.
Like, it felt very natural. And a lot of, almost everybody was involved with other Shortwave projects. Like, Shannon, who plays F, the cucumber beetle character, is the playwright for Garden of Edith, which also has some overlapping themes with this play that I thought was really interesting. Like, it, guess when the world shuts down and you're sitting in your garden, that's what you end up writing, some very thematically similar things. And Billy Kearns played E, the concussed character, and she also plays Magellan in the Soundcastle sequels. And then we ended up bringing in the festival director, Mariah Horner, to play the flirty dandelion character, and Becky, the director, Becky Bridger, the director of Soundcastle, ended up playing the person who's trying to flirt with the flirty dandelion character. So we just kind of had all this kind of really beautiful overlap between the cast and crew getting to be each other's casts and crews in other contexts.
If Leo were here, he'd say, slow down. Try it one hand at a time. Slower, he'd tell me. Be gentle. Treat the music like it's alive, like you love it. I'd laugh and tell him to drop dead.
What would you say that you, was sort of making that transition into radio theater, what would you say that you learned from this experience?
It kind of reminds me, so this is going to sound a bit out there maybe, but that's okay. It feels very similar to kind of preserving food in this way where like it was this year-long process, well, more than year-long process if you're counting the music writing, where, you know, like kind of gathering up music, writing these lines, and then the way that it was all recorded, I think, by June, and shortly thereafter, I had separately sent in the files for the music I had arranged and recorded, and then I didn't see it again. It was like pickles. Like it was like I sent it off to the sound designer to fill the jars with brine and dill and herbs and whatever, garlic, always garlic. Yeah, I guess it was just this like kind of long process in which it like became itself in different stages, and it's kind of neat tuning into the radio or playing it as a podcast, and it's this kind of preserved moment.
I love that you're preserving that experience.
Yeah. Well, huh. There's a line in the song Strawberry Brain, which was the first song I wrote after I had had a concussion, that's about, like, the whole idea is, like, preserve all my thoughts for later use. I'm under sweet sedation. And it was this kind of thing where when I was initially experiencing concussion symptoms, mm-hmm. part of me was thinking, man, like, this is such, like, good creative fodder, but I am so mentally and emotionally and physically broken, and just kind of writing down these little lines about like I have a strawberry brain, my brain's like a bruised strawberry, that sort of turns into something far later on. The preserving thing is,
I guess, an experience like a concussion. I mean, like you said, like it was a source of creative inspiration.
Yeah, well, and it was also very much a source of, I think, humility to the universe, if that's not too broad sounding, because I was very much a person who relied on my ability to think quickly and speak quickly, and I was performing a lot in my band at the time, and I kind of thought, okay, I got bumped on the head, maybe I'll cancel next week's gigs, and then the week after I'll go and put earplugs in and still play at the mansion, and that was not a good idea. There were moments going through the time where I was pretty disabled by my concussion where I had to figure out how to value myself just as a thing that is alive and in a capacity beyond what I could provide or like who could find me impressive or you know, even my connection to music and to writing was really stilted there, and so I had to just appreciate being like a living organism on the planet, because otherwise I didn't feel like I wanted to be alive, and that's no good. So I think maybe that also connects to the matter of connection to nature, that like I really kind of got this deep sense of being just part of everything in the same way a strawberry or a bug or a cucumber is. And sort of letting go of the need to be smart or able.
Here, kitty!
Hey, let him be.
Stay off the road.
Well, Half Past Lunchtime can be streamed on the CFRC website. It's now up on the podcast there. So thank you very much, Haley, for joining me to talk about your production.
Thank you. And thank you for joining me at the intersection of plum and cherry and plum and cherry and chestnut. We're at the pentagram of jam in the fruit belt. And thank you.
So that's it for us at Viewpoints. Our journalists this week were Kareem Musna in Kingston, Ontario, and Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia. National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in Ottawa. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaing. Take care of each other. See you next week.
JI.